The story you're about to enjoy is a factual tale, read to you from a fictional location. We believe.
Madam, a kitchen maid has relayed a bit of gossip heard in the shops this morning.
Oh, yes, I love a bit of excitement. What's the wild word, Mr. Darling?
That you are suspected of putting a curse on Miss Dina Dorkton, causing her to become disfigured.
Dina Dorkton? The woman who wants the town council to ban any and all Halloween celebrations and costumes in our happy village? I barely know of her. And besides, she's always had that piggy look, as does her mother.
Indeed, madam. But she hasn't always had a beard that regrows thicker every time she attempts to shave it off, now has she?
How wonderful. See tonight's guests in, won't you, darling?
With pleasure, madam.
Welcome to the Midnight Library, everyone. I'm your librarian and host, Miranda Merrick. Tonight, I thought we might reminisce just a little while and then discuss fairness, justice, and retaliation. After all, how can we be certain there exists any powers of protection for us upon this little ball of mud flying through the universe? Sometimes we may be tempted to direct the protection ourselves and show some bloody initiative. Remember the time your sister saved up her office job money to purchase a pricey cut of beautiful dappled blue carpeting for the new nursery for her soon-to-be-born first precious child? How she had the new rug wrapped in protective packaging and stored in the attic of your mother's house until the baby's room was ready? Remember how your least favorite brother snuck into the attic, threw the carpeting out the window of the house, and cut it up to use as floor mats in his disgusting jalopy? Remember how your sister went to the attic full of joy to retrieve it, and broke down in tears when she discovered it had been stolen, and just who had taken it, and what they had done to it? What if, since there seems to be little in the way of that immediate poetic justice we all hear so much about, something could be done to right this crooked wrong, to serve up a little old-fashioned tit-for-tat to the offender, providing a bit of universal equity and emotional compensation, a sense of true justice, if you will? We here are probably all familiar with the iconic image of the voodoo doll, crude human-like figures abused in various fashions, but generally ran through with long, vicious pins in order to exact some manner of punishment upon whomever's likeness the doll is meant to represent. But there is, in fact, a long and lush history of another such diminutive wee dummy-type doll, the curse poppet, that you sadly may not be as acquainted with. A harmless oversight that we at the Midnight Library aim to rectify this fine night. Tonight's reading at the Midnight Library is brought to you by Pastor Poppycock's Curse Poppets. Chief Work Jerk getting you down? Order the Boss Buster Poppet with 7 pins in its rump to banish that grump. Out of the boardroom and into the bathroom, give your taskmaster an intestinal disaster. See the priest in the least, Pastor Poppycock. Curse poppets are small, handmade figures that are a model of their larger living counterparts. They are also simply referred to as poppets, a word which is thought to be a simplification of the word puppet, both of which are common in the English language, meaning a fanciful plaything in mock-up form of an animal, person, or imaginative creature. The word poppet is even today spoken as a term of endearment. However, puppets are made from socks, gloves, and cloth remnants and intended to entertain. Curse poppets are decidedly different little things, with an entirely different intention altogether, the versatility of which may surprise you. Firstly, this type of doll or poppet has been embedded in humanity's society for thousands of years. Precisely such items have been written about and found in the ruins of ancient Greece, and even further back, in with the possessions of the inhabitants of ancient Egypt. While not a great deal is known about the exact intentions of poppets from the Egyptian culture, the Greek culture provides much documentation as to their purpose. Greek writings refer to the poppets as kolossoi, and were intended as powerful little dolls. So powerful, they were not only employed to influence the actions of common people, but also the will of deities. It's an interesting fact that the Greek people who made and carried the poppets saw them not so much as a tool for destruction, but as a tool for restraint. The dolls were meant to restrict the actions of various gods, to prevent a god from causing harm to you or your people, or helping your enemies. This magical process of control was referred to as binding. A binding spell was used in conjunction with the poppets and was written or spoken about in terms such as, "With thine voice, thy heart I bind." The idea of being bound encompasses the very definition of restraint as well as control. In modern times, we speak in bygone phrases without even realizing it, as in, "He's bound to become lost in the library." Greek poppets or kolossoi were sometimes made of clay or metal in the image of the god they represented and kept inside a tiny box or cask. They were often carried into battle in order to wield their power directly on the battlefield. The kolossoi were believed to also have influential power over ghosts, controlling the boundaries into which they could roam. The little Greek dolls of mock humans were often treated to a wide array of physical tortures to emulate and bind their intended likenesses. Their heads were twisted backwards to cause incapacitation or confusion. They were typically ran through with needles and nails. Many times, these implements were 13 in their number, 13 being popular for nefarious doings since, well, probably forever. Each piercing of a needle or nail was intended to hinder or paralyze the corresponding owner's body part, bringing weakness or crippling arms and legs. Pins thrust into the eyes, ears, and mouth would impair cognitive abilities. A nail stabbed into the heart would inhibit one's will or love for another. There was even such a poppet that was an erotic kolossoi that was, let us say, adorned or manipulated in a fashion that would induce love, light the fire of passion, or maintain faithfulness in a lover, or in kind manipulated heinously to repel a romantic rival or suitor. To cause the kolossoi, and dare we say even more modern poppets thereafter, to be extremely more powerful, the doll would contain actual tiny bodily cast-offs of its real-life likeness. This might be a bit of a person's hair or fingernail or snippet of worn clothing. This was believed to infuse the very essence of the person into the little poppet. Sometimes a written binding spell was then attached to or wrapped around the poppet, leaving not a single doubt what the owner intended. The note might read, "I bind thee to compulsively make my tea." Many of the Greek dolls were ultimately secreted away, well hidden, or even buried to ensure there was no chance of the intended target finding them and undoing all of the binding magic. These ancient finds reassure us that just as we crave control over our own lives, and sometimes the lives of others, our ancestors way, way back across time tell us, we are all of the same mind. Even more recent but still very old cultures are known for their forays into the forbidden. Europe, it is thought, is slightly ahead in the making of curse poppets, followed closely by Africa and then the Americas, the latter two having their function under the terms voodoo and hoodoo, both of which are veritable rabbit holes of dark mysticism and magic. It is safe to state that nearly every known culture on the face of the earth has a history of its people either drawing figures or creating dolls as effigies of themselves or others in hopes of gaining control over life's happenings. Even the first findings of primitive cave paintings depicting people hunting, fighting, or taking part in mysterious actions or rituals with strange beings are thought to be the expression of the artist's hopes of influencing control over a future happening. However, when it comes to control, some of us are more determined than others. After all, axes aren't going to grind themselves, now are they? Here's a bit of sunny news. Not all poppets are for cursing. A poppet is a kind of tool for use in what is known as sympathetic magic, the idea that a person can be affected magically by actions performed on something that represents them symbolically. And what happens to them may be either bad or good. In this way, the dolls, when plied with various intentions, may bring about health, healing, prosperity, and love, or in turn, pain, illness, disfigurement, poverty, and disdain. They can represent one's own self or that of another person. Remember to patronize tonight's sponsor, Pastor Poppycock's Curse Poppets. Got a lovesick suitor you wish you could neuter? A reverse poppet is what you need. This little doll painlessly works on you. It will cause your adorer to see you with horror. There's horse, of course, and pigtopus, but it's up to you how much ugly you spew. Your pretty face can have a toad in its place. Trust Pastor Poppycock. Let's discuss the look of these fascinating little beings, shall we? They appear to be as individualized and unique as people themselves. They are typically made of cloth and stuffed, but the antiquated ones were cut from stone or formed from clay. Some were made from iron or bronze. Many are simple human figures fashioned from twigs, dry grass, or straw, and tied up with string. These are a few of my favorite things. There doesn't seem to be any one way to make a poppet at all, so the rule is apparently to use whatever resources one has on hand. Here at the Midnight Library, our poppets are typically pretty little things, attired in deep blue velvet and stuffed with wolf hair and belladonna, and on fire. As for modern curse poppets, of the last few hundred years anyway, the color of the material and the pattern printed or drawn on that material often play an influential role in the outcome the doll is intended to produce. For instance, those looking for love might dress their doll in the color red or pink, which represents flesh and blood, taking further care to adorn the material with hearts, Cupid figures, and roses. Those in need of creativity should choose bright orange or yellow fabric with suns or other fiery symbols. This is meant to spark the imagination. Health is said to come through the colors of white, silver, or blue, with designs of clouds or blue skies. To attract money, the poppet might be colored gold, silver, or green, and have images of coins, cups, or dollar bills. I'm sure you may have guessed that vengeful poppets are often but not always bedecked in black. They are the ones who are put through their paces, my friends. They sometimes appear with disfigurements themselves, or are mock tortured with all manner of horrors, some to the point of being bound up, pierced, singed, melted, crushed, dismembered, and buried. Or even eaten, I've heard. You'd have to be awfully hungry to eat a little doll to put a curse on someone. Good thing we all have an appetite. This proves what we've always known on some level about the determination of human nature, does it not? That some people will try just about anything to get the world to spin their way. Does it pay off in the end? Who can say? If you are one such person, resolute in your desire to have the power to direct the actions of others in order to have the outcome you wish, I ask you to please be careful. I have it on good authority that to meddle in such affairs can sometimes backfire, and you may discover that others are then inspired to manipulate you. Their magic is real and not make-believe. Because, my dear guests, here at the Midnight Library, the last thing we want is anything bad to happen to you. We love you. Let us return to our wistful remembrance, shall we, dear guests? Looking back, you recall your sister's lovely baby arrived healthy, and she was beyond happy. In the new nursery, second-choice carpeting was installed that sufficed very nicely. And your thieving, conniving brother, what was it you said happened to him shortly after his hurtful heist? Ah, yes, I seem to remember you telling me that one night after working his shift at a famous but now defunct Mexican restaurant, you remember they promised a celebration of food. He climbed upon the roof of the stucco-style building and bet his fellow employees below that he could safely jump back down. They in turn dared him to do just that, and so he jumped. And upon landing, broke both of his ankles, the breaks being so severe that casts had to be in place for 6 months. He was miserable. He couldn't drive his dreadful jalopy or walk on any carpeting. My word, what a tale you have there. Poetic justice at work indeed. I myself don't have any fully human brothers, so I fail to completely relate, I'm afraid. But if I did, the tale would no doubt play out in a justly similar fashion. Thank you for sharing your story with us. On your way out of the reading room this evening, stop by the reception desk to see the resources available to you. We think you'll like what you find. Good night, my dear guests.
Madam, I believe the guests have all gone. I can no longer detect them. What are you working on?
I'm having difficulty completing this binding spell, Mr. Darling. I cannot get past the point where I say, "With thine voice, thy heart I bind."
With thine teeth I bite. You're behind.
The Midnight Library is co-produced by Tess Feifel and Astonishing Legends Productions and is edited by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell with music and sound design by Ryan McCullough. Special thanks to Miranda Merrick and Mr. Darling. No part of the show may be reproduced in any manner without express written consent. Copyright Astonishing Legends, all rights reserved.